from KQED.
And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Well, yesterday marked yet another wave of PG&E's so-called public safety power shutoffs. It's all happening since the Kincade Fire broke out last week. From businesses forced to close temporarily to interrupted supply chains, experts estimate the economic cost of this week's blackouts could end up anywhere from $65 million to $2.5 billion. And so for the rest of the hour, we're going to be talking about how the outages are affecting the state's economy and individual businesses. And we really want to hear from you on this. How has your business been affected by the power shutoffs? Give us a call now at 866-733-6786. Again, it's 866-733-6786. Or you can get in touch on Twitter or Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. And as always, you can mail us as well. It's forum at kqed.org. Joining us is Michael Wera, Director of the Climate and Energy Policy Program at Stanford University's Woods Institute for the Environment. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, first of all, how do you estimate the economic loss to California businesses from these planned energy shutdowns? And where do you put the number?
Well, there are some commonly accepted tools for estimating the costs of a blackout to businesses and to residences. And probably the best one is actually one that was developed across the bay at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. And that's the one I use. And it's a little bit tricky because we don't exactly know who was blacked out. And it makes a huge difference to understanding the cost. Businesses face very large costs, really disruptive costs from a blackout. Of course, it's expensive for residential customers too because you often have to throw away the contents of your refrigerator, but the costs are actually much smaller. We think though that the costs of the blackout we've just experienced easily run into the billions of dollars. And they're as we see this happen more and more frequently, those costs are going to accumulate.
What are some of the less obvious ways that blackouts cause businesses to lose money? I mean, obviously, if they're shutting their doors, there's no customers, there's no money coming in, whether it's a restaurant or a dry cleaner, whatever it might be. But, you know, what are some of the ways we might not think about?
Well, I think some impacts we've seen include the fact that their employees are not necessarily coming to work. So even if you have power, the disruptions to people's lives the fact that schools are canceled, for example, and so two career families are struggling to figure out how to manage their affairs, that has collateral damage. That does collateral damage to businesses. I also think that the perception that businesses may not be open also impacts customer flow. Certainly, the businesses where I live, I was blacked out in Mill Valley, and there's kind of word of mouth about who's open and who's not, who has backup generators and who doesn't. And that can really impact both positively or negatively, I think.
A lot of businesses, of course, are operating, you know, largely or even entirely on the internet now. What about them? How are they affected?
That's a great point. And what we've seen through the current blackout is that broadband providers do not necessarily have backup power, so that even if businesses have power, if they are located in an area that's blacked out, they may not be able to access the internet. That's been had a major impact on individuals that work from home, which is a big factor in the Bay Area. So I think moving forward, we need to think about how we can ensure that even if the cell network stays up, we also have the broadband internet reliably functioning during a blackout. And that's important also from a safety perspective.
And I realize it's maybe apples and oranges, but how do you calculate losses from an issue like this where there are power outages plus the fires, you know, versus other kinds of natural disasters, say an earthquake?
Well, you know, I think one thing to emphasize is as large as these costs are, and I think everyone who's experienced the outages has felt those costs, they are actually a lot smaller than the losses that would no doubt occur, will no doubt occur when we experience it from a large earthquake in the Bay Area. they're much smaller than the losses that were encountered because of the fires in Napa and Sonoma County or in Paradise in Butte County over the last couple of years. So the state as a whole is saving money. As large as the costs from these outages are, they are probably still better than it's still better to have live through this really inconvenient and disruptive experience.
But both economically, I mean, it's a better economically, but also from obviously a human safety perspective.
Absolutely, and I think also from folks who live in the Bay Area may remember the air quality after the Camp Fire last year. I personally know several children who were admitted to the ER in the Bay Area with severe asthma attacks. And I think it's important to recognize that many people are sickened and die from the particulate matter that is, kind of dosed on the entire Bay Area after one of these fires.
And when you talk about the losses, you said it could easily be in the billions. Are those sort of permanent losses, or can they somehow be made up, as time goes by?
In general, they are permanent losses. Most of the losses that occur are due to lost business activity that won't be recouped, lost inventory that needs cold storage, and they're permanent. There are things we can do moving forward to mitigate those losses, right? A lot of the markets are thinking very differently about backup generation at this point, and that will mitigate the losses. I think we need to be thinking about microgrids for the small town business districts that are likely to be impacted by these power shutoffs moving forward. That will mitigate the losses.
And when you say we need to be thinking about them, I mean, is that something the CPUC should be doing, local government should be doing, businesses themselves should be doing, or all of the above?
I think it's an all of the above, and I would also add the state into that equation. The problem with relying on utilities and the PUC is that they tend to work at a relatively slow pace. And everyone who's experienced the last 2 weeks in Northern California, I think, views this situation as untenable and unacceptable, all the way up to the highest levels of government. The governor has said as much himself.
Although it's interesting because, yes, government does move slowly. But in a situation like Cal Fire, I mean, they move incredibly fast. So when you have to, I mean, maybe sometimes regulations need to be reduced or eliminated or put on hold for a while. But I mean, government can move quickly when it needs to.
I think that's right. I think we need to move fast here and be willing to maybe break some rules and ask permission later to move like a Silicon Valley company to solve this problem for everyone living in the Bay Area. I mean, we are a place that knows how to invent new solutions, disruptive solutions, and that's what we need to be doing right now.
Talking with Michael Wara, he is director of the Climate and Energy Policy Program at Stanford University's Woods Institute for the Environment. He's also a member of the State Commission on Wildfire Cost and Recovery. And we'd love to hear from you, especially small business owners in the Bay Area who've been affected one way or another by these outages. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. And let's go to Ben in Napa. Welcome.
Hey, good morning. Just wanted to give everybody a heads up. The wine industry is having some issues with power outages, mostly with keeping wine cool as it ferments. This time of year, grapes are all showing up at the winery, and the weather has been beautiful for harvest.
And so how are wineries coping with that?
A lot of generator power, generator assistance if people have it. A lot of wineries are partners with other wineries, so grapes may be rerouted to other wineries that have generator power. Just one of the issues has been the evacuations in certain areas where people essentially have to walk away from their operation.
And Ben, of course, I was just going to say, every year your harvest, one of the peak times for wineries is the harvest and the beginning of the production, and that is always going to coincide with wildfire season. I mean, that's just something I guess they've had to deal with for a long time, but of course the depth of the problem maybe has gotten worse.
That's correct, yeah. Wineries, going through the fermentation process after the grapes come off the vine, they are crushed and put into tanks to go through the fermentation process. And that's something that if you can keep the tank cool, you can have that fermentation process take 2 to 3 weeks and end nicely. If it's uncooled, it happens way too fast. And other things, other winery operations, just as getting in there and pumping over the tanks and ensuring that that fermenting juice is mixing is also important, again, with having to evacuate certain areas. Certain wineries have just had to close down.
Yeah. All right. Well, Ben, thanks so much for sharing that. Good luck. And fortunately, at least, there wasn't the kind of loss of life that we've seen in past wildfires. And Michael, what are some of the special issues that wineries face? We just heard a number of them from the caller, but what else? I mean, the wine industry looms so large in these counties where, of course, the wildfires are most likely.
Yes. Well, I think wineries in Napa and Sonoma have been enormously challenged. I mean, there are workforce issues that have been loomed very large because of the fires. And
in terms of displacement.
The impact on low-income residents of areas that have been impacted by fires is really much larger than for the high-income residents.
Well, it was a great article, maybe you saw it today in the New York Times, about the economic inequality and how it's it plays out in the aftermath of these disasters in terms of who benefits from insurance and who doesn't, who struggles afterwards, who gets to build a bigger house than they have.
That's exactly right, and anyone who lives in Santa Rosa will tell you that the rents have gone up enormously since the fires, and that also has an impact on low and moderate income residents. So it's a really challenging situation. I think that's a big issue for wineries. I would just sort of amplify what Ben said and note that a lot of the larger commercial and industrial customers are very concerned about this issue. I've spoken with
which issue? Do you mean the inequality or the
blackouts?
Blackouts generally.
I've spoken with a number of the high tech manufacturers in the South Bay. They're very nervous about ever losing power. They have the risk of losing hundreds of millions of dollars of inventory, components that are in the manufacturing process, if they even face an outage of seconds. And they, the long-term risk to the Bay Area is that these kinds of manufacturing might decide to locate elsewhere if they can't have guaranteed always-on power.
Oh, but of course, these companies were built knowing they're also in earthquake country.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
So, the wildfires in some ways is much less of a risk in Silicon Valley than earthquakes in some ways.
Earthquakes are something that occurs once in a generation. If we're going to have outages every fall, that's a very different kind of problem for these kinds of companies to manage.
Yeah. All right. Back to the phones now. Sharon in Mendocino County, you're next. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning. So I just wanted to say that I'm a physical therapist, and 2 days a week I have an office where I see people where I can't go because it's too cold. 2 days a week I see people in their homes. And yesterday I was treating people outdoors where it was sunny and warmer than in their houses. And people can't get to their doctors because the doctor's offices are a lot of them are closed as well. So that's another impact in both financial and healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the whole county.
Yeah, and that can be in some cases a life and death situation.
Well, they can get to the emergency rooms. But, just for follow-up for surgeries and things like that, and, you're feeling crummy or whatever. So that's just been my experience. I live off the grid, so I don't have the experience at home. That's problematic. In fact, it's a beautiful day up here.
But there's no power, right, in Mendocino County anywhere?
Well, there's no power in Mendocino County, but there's a lot of us who live off the grid entirely. So we have power, and right now I have a neighbor's food in my fridge and people taking showers. And I think everybody who's off the grid here is offering help. And a lot of people have generators. They're running all through Ukiah and every town up here during the day, and people turn them off at night.
So. All right. We'll take care. And it sounds like you're not affected by the power. You're actually the go-to person up there. So thanks for doing that. I'm sure your neighbors appreciate that. Sharon, thanks so much for the call. Michael, to what extent you were talking about Silicon Valley companies, concerned about this and if it's going to be an every fall kind of a situation every year, to what extent do they see renewable energy, solar, for example, as at least a partial solution to this?
Well, I think they're taking a hard look at forms of backup generation. So solar is important. Batteries and kind of microgrids that allow them to island from the larger grid that's facing a disruption are really important. So it might be batteries. It might be fuel cells. There are a whole set of technologies that potentially provide reliability through an outage like this. And they're looking at investment in those.
Here's a tweet from Rose who says, without power, our digital marketing agency is unable to do 90% of its work. Add in the Kincaid fire and you have unsafe road conditions to get to work and evacuated employees. Our Santa Rosa-based office is closed while the fire is a risk, and with no power, we can't even work remotely to keep business moving. I'd love to hear how other local businesses are adapting, keeping their employees taken care of and their customers happy. That's a lot to ask for, Michael, in a situation like this. Let's go back to the phones now. And Stephanie, I'm sorry, is it Stephanie's on the line?
Yes, hi.
Milton, go ahead. Sorry. Milton?
Hi, I'm calling on hello. This is Milton. I'm calling on behalf of all the Northern Californians, like myself, who maintain commercial cannabis operations and are affected by the power outages and are having our weed plants die because they don't have any light. It's, not as serious as some situations, but it's definitely affecting a lot of business owners who are in that industry.
Yeah.
Weed is grown indoors, it needs light to survive, and we can't turn our lights on. It's causing a lot of problems.
And Michael, of course, the cannabis industry is a growing part of the economy in California.
Absolutely. And indoor agriculture, faces enormous impacts from any kind of an outage like this. And cannabis is a part of that, but there are other crops also that are grown indoors. High-value ag is really impacted. And I think it's something that, we all need to be thinking about. How do we provide to the businesses of the state resilience to these blackouts? And part of that is going to be hardening the grid. That's going to take some time. But we need action faster. And I think the nice thing is there are companies in California that stand ready to provide those kinds of solutions. So this is kind of a made in California solution, maybe to a made in California problem.
All right. Now we're going to go to Stephanie. Stephanie Martins, she's co-owner of Pond Farm Brewing Company in San Rafael. Stephanie, thanks for joining us.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
How is your business doing? Well, how have you been affected by the power outages up in Marin?
Yeah, so we actually had power restored last night, or early this morning, I should say, at about 1 a.m. So we had several days where we were without power. My husband and I own this brewery. It's a brewery and tap room, and we brew all our beer on site. We're about 7 months old only. So we faced about 76 hours without power. And we're also, our family lives in San Rafael with two young kids. So the impact was felt both as business owners, but as a family trying to cope with no power and school closures. We had to play each day by ear and adapt to changing circumstances because there was a lot of uncertainty about what would or wouldn't happen with the power shutoffs and restoration. Communication was also difficult, both getting information about outages, but also communicating with our staff. Our taproom manager, he had no cell coverage or access to internet or email from his house in Fairfax. Normally, we're open from noon to 10 p.m., but we were able to open even with the power out from noon to 6 p.m. each day, since our draft system works using pressurized CO2. So as long as we could keep the beer cold, we were able to dispense it, but it took some scrappiness to rig things up, and it wouldn't have worked for very much longer.
So we heard a few minutes ago from one of the somebody from up in Napa who that some of the problems the wineries there are facing. It sounds like as a brewer of beer, maybe there's a little more flexibility because the timing isn't as critical as it is, say, with the harvest of grapes.
Sure, that could be. I mean, if the power outage had continued, we would have started to, we already did lose product, several thousand dollars worth of product, but we would have been in bad shape if we had lost all of the beer in kegs and cans. Because at a certain point, if the beer sits warm or even the beer that we had brewing in the tanks, we would have lost all of that. And then even if the power had gone back on, we wouldn't have been able to open because we wouldn't have had anything to sell. But it is a quicker turnaround compared to wine. You can brew a beer in a matter of a couple of weeks, whereas, if you miss a harvest or you miss that wine, that would probably be a bigger hit.
So you lose revenue, you know, in the short term as the power is off. Is that something you can make up? Is it something you can write off? Is it something your insurance company can help with? I mean, how do you deal with it?
Well, being new business owners, I think we're still figuring some of that out. You know, we were able to regain some of the revenue because we were able to open just, you know, face the loss of revenue in the evenings, which is usually when we're busiest. You know, ultimately, this isn't going to sink us. We're able to weather and we feel really lucky as a new business to be in that position. You know, and there are some intangibles. We had to drop everything to focus on how to open and support our community. But, you know, we'll be looking to into insurance soon. And, you know, we hope just that, you know, the community was appreciative of us being open. We know that. And that was actually a nice aspect of this. There was some silver lining in here. You know, we were able to be there when people needed a place to gather. And so that felt really good. And, you know, hopefully, you know, there were some folks who came in for the first time, I know, and hopefully they'll be coming back into our tap room. So maybe not a total loss.
Good. And Stephanie, how did you feel about the communication you received from the county or from PG&E?
Well, you know, we know there were a lot of decisions being made and a ton of people working tirelessly on this behind the scenes that we're not privy to all of the information and everything that went down. But it was confusing and it was difficult, you know, both as a business and as a family that we're living in a fairly urban area to understand sort of the strategy behind it. And we were getting conflicting information, you know. A long time ago, we were told, you know, fire season's coming, be prepared for maybe potentially up to 48 hours. You know, well, for us, it ended up being about 76 hours, so it's quite a bit longer. But, you know, this is the reality that we're living in, and I think it was just difficult to thinking about the logistics involved with communicating with so many people and managing such a complex grid system. It's hard to, you know, say I could do it better.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if the outages saved lives or saved homes, it's worth it. It could be a lot worse. We weren't evacuated. No one lost lives. So it was frustrating and difficult, but we just tried to take it day by day.
All right. Well, hopefully now that the power's on, you'll get some new customers that stick around and maybe get some new ones down the road as well. Stephanie Martins is co-owner of Bond Farm Brewing Company in San Rafael, where the lights are back on, the power's back on. Stephanie, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks. The only thing I'd say is it's Pond Farm, P-O-N-D.
Oh, I thought that's what I said, but maybe I didn't sound that way. Okay, thanks for it. P-O-N-D.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling. All right, now we're going to be joined by Lauren Cartwright. She is communications coordinator for the Sonoma County Economic Development Board. And Lauren, thanks for joining us.
Hello there. Good morning.
Hi. I know that you just completed a survey of businesses asking them about how they've been coping, some of the losses. Who did you hear from and what did they tell you?
So we just did a survey after the first power shutoff that we experienced a couple of weeks ago. It was open for about 5 days and open to the entire business community, so all different industries and sectors from agriculture to tourism to education, healthcare, and even more. And we received about 560 responses, which is pretty good, you know, for a county of about 500,000 people. So based on that, we kind of just asked questions about, did you lose revenue? Did you lose wages? Did you actually see a spike in your business or anything to that effect? And we definitely received a variety of responses, kind of varying from the length that people had their power shut off from, kind of looking at the different industries. The majority of them that responded were involved in like retail and hospitality and wineries, and there was some agriculture as well. And a lot of folks were just kind of, you know, even if they were out of power for 24 hours, they didn't lose anything. Perhaps the folks who were out of power for more extensive amounts of time, you know, obviously their losses increased.
What were the big takeaways from the survey? I mean, what do you do with this information?
So what we're going to do is kind of interesting and an unfortunate situation, but when we first were looking at this information earlier this summer, when we heard about the potential power shutoffs, we realized with our data partner Moody's Analytics that there wasn't really any data out there to kind of provide a relevant, you know, context for economic impact. So we're kind of pioneering it for the region a little bit in terms of getting the right questions and the percentages, partnering with Moody's so we can actually calculate an accurate economic impact. So moving forward, based on the responses that businesses have provided, we should be able to hopefully find different resources for them, you know, based on, you know, it's less than 25% of businesses didn't experience a loss in percentage of daily revenue. What can we do in the future to help set them up for success? So, you know, if we're looking at different grants or different programs, you know, based on these potential shutoffs in the area, can we apply to help businesses get generators or to just different funding to try and set us up so we can be better prepared in the future?
Well, let me just ask Michael Wara, do you have any suggestions for her in terms of resources or places that her, you know, the businesses up there can go to get, you know, information that might be helpful?
Yeah, well, I think the PUC has recently instituted a program to focus their spending on electricity storage in high fire risk areas. And I think, you know, it's a natural to think that businesses that are trying to serve residents that have been blacked out might be, you know, good opportunities to take advantage of that option. And the governor has also announced kind of emergency spending in the same vein.
Yeah. All right. Well, Lauren, hopefully that's helpful, and good luck to you and to all the businesses up there in Sonoma County. I hope they weather this as well as possible. Thanks so much. Well, we've got a couple of minutes left, but let's see if we can get one more call in here. Peter in Mill Valley, you're on.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Go right ahead. We're short on time.
Yes. All right. It's Peter Schumacher, Buckeye Roadhouse in Mill Valley and Bungalow 44. Just a few comments. You know, it's tough for small business owners to lose 4 or 5 days of income because you still pay every utilities. But it's equally hard for the employees, and particularly the ones who live paycheck to paycheck. And the lack of communication, not only between PG&E, but I think the cell phone companies really were extremely disappointing this time around, because AT&T in particular didn't seem to care about their connections and not enough battery backup. So cell phone was down. Nobody knew.
Peter, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we are just about out of time. Hopefully, they are listening, and we'll take your comments into account. Best of luck to you. Michael Wara, real quick, any final thoughts real quick?
You know, the one thing I would say is that, you know, one cost that we don't fully understand yet, but is definitely coming for all of California, is the impact on insurance, both commercial and home insurance, from what we've observed over the last few days.
Yeah. And of course, the cost of getting a home insured in these areas is going to go way up, continue to go way up as well. Michael Wara, thank you so much for joining us this half hour, director of the Climate and Energy Policy Program at Stanford University's Woods Institute for the Environment. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to our other guests this hour. Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. Thanks so much for listening, and stay safe out there.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.